Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
It's good to see you. Good to have you with us. A couple quick family updates for you. Just for those of you that have been praying for our family through a couple of things, if you don't know what's going on, just kind of pretend you know what's going on. So our daughter Danielle is getting better. She's making some progress and improvements with the issues with her legs. She said they feel like they're maybe getting a little bit stronger, but the ache and the pain is still there. We still don't really have a solid answer as to what's caused the issue with her legs. They've eliminated all of the like really big major problematic stuff, so that's good. And all that. So just continue praying for that process as we can identify what's going on with her and how to get her better. Our son David, we took him up to college last Sunday. Was it last Sunday? What's today's date?
13.
Today's the 13th. We took him up 2 weeks ago. And so he was sick when he went up. About midweek, we got a call from the soccer trainer that said he needs to come home and see his own doctor, because he'd lost 12 pounds in 2 days and they were getting a little bit concerned about all that. So went and picked him up, brought him home to see his doctor. The short version of the story is I picked him up, he got in the car and he said, "I don't love it." He said, the intense competitive soccer environment. I love soccer, I love to play, I love all that, but I don't love this. And so he's decided not to play soccer. So he's home for a couple more weeks and he'll go back up. What else you want to know? Our roof leaked again on Wednesday, so I was thrilled about that, just so incredibly excited about that. But it didn't leak on Saturday, so I'm totally confused and have no idea what to do about it. So anyway, I need to let you know that our music team leader, Sandy, was such a trooper this morning. So you can see up in that corner, right? You got to look straight. If I had a little laser pointer, I'd point. Right up in that corner is a spider about this big around. And I'm going to go off screen for people online. But that spider started out about right here this morning, right behind Sandy's head. And then all during the music set, the spider made its way up the wall and then onto the ceiling this way towards the fire smoke alarm thing there. So she's sitting here. That thing's like right over her head. I'm waiting for it to drop right on her shoulder. So now, for those of you that get bored during the message, just watch the spider. And if that spider makes its way over my head, please tell me. Well, it's coming down the wall. Here, let's just sit and watch the spider this morning. How about that? So, all right. 20th century psychologist Abraham Maslow is known most for his hierarchy of needs. He also coined a phrase called the Jonah complex. He named the Jonah complex after the Hebrew prophet Jonah and said, "People who suffer from the Jonah complex are people who are fearful of doing what they know they can do and oftentimes should do." So this is what Abraham Maslow said about the Jonah complex. So often we run away from responsibilities dictated, or rather suggested, by nature, by fate, even sometimes by accident. Just as Jonah tried in vain to run away from his fate. Now, I'm not going to argue with Maslow about the whole concept of fate, and that's all beyond the scope of this message. But let me ask a question. Has there ever been anyone who has run away from their responsibilities? Who has tried to avoid doing the things they know they could do? Or maybe the things they could do. The Jonah complex is actually more of a complex about success than it is failure. For Jonah, the Hebrew prophet who this is named after, his running from was running from what if what God gives me to do actually works. That's kind of the story. The story of Jonah is kind of a complex story. For those of us who grew up in church, it's a story that even people who don't have a lot of church background tend to have heard of and are a little bit familiar with and tend to equate it with one other character in the story. If we did a fill in the blank and I said Jonah and the whale, it's incorrect because the biblical narrative tells us that it was a great fish. Nowhere does it ever tell us it was a whale. I think we got the whale from children's books because it looks really cool to have the guy in the belly of a fish that would actually be big enough to sit and build a little campfire and cook our dinner for 3 days and stuff like that. But in the biblical narrative, it just says it was a great fish. So Jonah struggles with, he's the namesake of the Jonah complex. We're familiar with the story. Most of us know Jonah's the story of a guy who God told to do something. He didn't want to do it, so he ran away from doing what God wanted him to do. He wound up and got put in the belly of a whale for 3 days. That's kind of like this divine timeout. God put Jonah in a timeout to get him to do what he wanted him to do. Though that's all true, except maybe the whale part. And it's all accurate, except maybe the whale part. That's like my drum beating, I guess. There's so much more to the story of Jonah than just Jonah and the big fish. There's so much more to the story that connects to your story and connects to my story. When God told Jonah to do something, Jonah had to make a choice. And when God tells us to do something, we have to make a choice. It's a very simple story. But just like Jonah's story gets complex, our stories often get complex because of the decisions that we make. So, Jonah is told by God to get up and go to the great city of Nineveh. Nineveh is the capital of the nation of Assyria. And it was probably the greatest city of its time. Assyria was Nineveh was where the king of Assyria lived. The king of Assyria, it was the dominant world power at the time. When the nation of Israel divided into two different nations, the two different kingdoms, the northern kingdom of 10 tribes and the southern kingdom of 12 or two tribes, then the northern kingdom was conquered and virtually annihilated by the nation of Assyria. And so the people of Israel hated the people of Assyria. And the people of Israel hated the people in Nineveh. But God seems to care about the people of Nineveh because he tells him, get up and go to the great city of Nineveh. God recognizes it's a great city. It's wealthy. It's prosperous. But he also recognizes it as a wicked city because he says, announce my judgment against it because I have seen how wicked its people are. Now, first off, for me, I don't really like to go and announce judgment on anyone because you often know what happens to the messenger, right? So I would imagine that if Jonah was anything like me, he probably is a little bit apprehensive about going and announcing God's judgment. The other thing that makes this interesting is that the people of Assyria likely didn't worship the same God Jonah worshipped. They likely had their own gods that they worshipped. And so it would be a little bit presumptuous of Jonah to go to the people of Nineveh and say, hey, my God says if you don't get your act together, something bad's going to happen. They're like, well, we don't really care about your God. We only care about our gods. And so Jonah's in a little bit of a predicament here because not only does he not want to be the messenger, he doesn't want to deliver the message. And not only does he want to deliver the message, he doesn't want to deliver the message because he doesn't care about the people of Nineveh. The only thing he cares about the people of Nineveh is that he doesn't like them. He hates them. His people hate their people and all of that. So he goes on, and this is what Jonah does. Jonah said, but Jonah got up and went in the opposite direction to get away from the Lord. In Jerusalem, Jonah would have likely been about 750 miles from Nineveh. But the opposite direction would have led him to a place where he could be about 3,000 miles away from the people of Nineveh. So he decides that he's not going to go. And notice that he goes in the opposite direction. But notice that he doesn't go in the opposite direction to get further away from Nineveh. He goes in the opposite direction to get away from the Lord. Jonah thinks in the complexity of his situation that distance is going to remove him from the responsibility of doing what God gave him to do. I don't know about you, but sometimes we think if we can put a little bit of distance between ourselves, a little bit of time, a little bit of space, if we can put a little bit of distance between ourselves and God, maybe God will relieve us of this responsibility. Maybe God will absolve us of this responsibility. Maybe God will find somebody else to do it. Or maybe God will just forget that he told me to do it in the first place and I won't have to do it. Sometimes when we want to run from God, when we run in the opposite direction, we think time and space and distance will relieve us of that responsibility. And what Jonah does here is Jonah makes a very intentional decision with intentional steps and intentional actions in it. It tells us that he went down to the port of Joppa where he found a ship leaving for Tarshish. And here's part of the fascinating thing. He found a ship leaving for Tarshish. A ship of Tarshish, that phrase is used in the Old Testament part of the Bible numerous times. And it is often used in the context of self-sufficiency and greed. Tarshish was a very prosperous city. Tarshish was a very wealthy city. Tarshish was a city where people went to pursue dreams of wealth and prosperity. And a ship of Tarshish was a ship that would take you to a place where your efforts were good enough. And so Saul, you see what Jonah's doing here. Jonah's running the opposite direction from the Lord, and he's going to Tarshish, where it is about self-sufficiency and greed. And it says he bought a ticket and went on board. Now, here's the thing. This is a detail that's easy to overlook because we don't understand the economy of the day. Money was relatively new in Jewish society. And it was also very scarce. The vast majority of people relied on the barter system. They traded what they had for things. Very few people would have had enough financial means, money-wise, to go and actually buy a ticket. So Jonah may have been. Now, it's possible that Jonah took whatever he had and bartered for the ticket and all that. It's possible. But a lot of commentators say that Jonah must have been a person of some financial means, which would make even more sense why he decided to go to Tarshish, which would be a place of self-sufficiency and greed. So there's a connection there. I mean, obviously, I don't know because I wasn't there. And I didn't see whether Jonah bartered a couple of chickens, because, you know, we all want to get as far away from chickens as possible, right? My chicken-hating friends out there. But I don't know if he bartered or if he bought, but he had enough financial means to go to a place of everybody's looking around wanting to know who the chicken-hating people are. It's Kay Brummett and Sharon Acton. The two of you raise your hand so everyone knows you guys are the chicken-hating, chicken-fearing people. Sorry, I will probably get in trouble for both of those later, but it'll be later because I had a buddy of mine text last night and said he had two extra tickets to the Brickyard and wanted to know if David and I wanted to go. So we're going to go to the Brickyard today. So there's that. So he's going to a place of self-sufficiency greed, and here's why he's going. He's hoping to escape from the Lord by sailing to Tarshish. He's not hoping to escape from what God wants him to do. He's actually hoping to escape from God altogether. So, if you're familiar with the story, you know a little bit about what happens next. But things get really, really interesting because Jonah boards this ship and they set sail for Tarshish. And this, like, mega violent storm comes up. This storm is like maybe one of the most intense storms that the sailors on this boat had experienced. And so they're throwing stuff overboard, you know, just trying to keep the ship afloat and trying to make sure that it doesn't go down and all that. Where's the spider? So she was coming after the spider. Where is the spider? Oh, he's all the way over there. I don't care about spider anymore. It's not over my head. It's coming after you guys now. I tell you what, I'll keep an eye on the spider, and if it gets over your head, I'll let you know. Yeah, it's coming after Sandy again. That spider likes you. So this storm comes up, and while this most intense storm that maybe these sailors have ever experienced is going on, and they're chucking everything overboard, Jonah's underneath asleep. And so the captain of the ship goes down, and he wakes Jonah up because they're trying to figure out what's the cause of this storm, what's happening. And back in that day, they did something they called casting lots. And they cast lots to see what the gods had to say about a certain circumstance and situation. And so they cast lots to see what's the cause of the storm, and the lots fall to Jonah. And Jonah says, the lots are right. It's me. I'm running away from God. And so they say, well, if you're running away from God and you're the cause of this storm, what's your story? Tell us more about your story. And Jonah answers and says, I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord. And there's an interesting thing there with the word Lord we'll get to in a second. The God of heaven who made the sea and the land. The sailors were terrified when they heard this, for he had already told them he was running away from the Lord. So the soldiers are terrified. And they ask Jonah, well, what should we do about this? And Jonah says, throw me overboard. If you throw me overboard, everything will be fine. This is my fault because I'm running from God. And for whatever reason, the soldiers decide not to throw him overboard. But they continue to keep Jonah on board and continue to fight this storm and continue to try to row to safety through this storm, which is fascinating. Because why is Jonah on the ship to begin with? Jonah is on the ship to run away from God because God told him to go to Nineveh and communicate his message to people that Jonah hated. And Jonah's name literally means dove and symbolizes a compassionate peace, a compassionate form of love. And these sailors on this ship who don't even believe in the same God as Jonah, these sailors on this ship have more compassion for Jonah than Jonah has for the people of Nineveh. But he tells them that he was running away from the Lord. Now, the word Lord there, there are three Hebrew words for God. Elohim, when you see it in the Hebrew narrative and in the Old Testament, it's pretty much a generic term. That's used, and then Adonai is so Elohim is a generic term used for God, like little g God, and so it would have been like a tribal or a national god. Probably all the sailors on the ship had their own tribal god that they prayed to and they worshipped, and while the storm's going on, they're praying to their tribal god to rescue them and all of that. And there was a belief that when you left your nation, you left that tribal god as well. And so the tribal god didn't travel with you. It was a localized thing. And so Jonah in that culture would think, if I leave Jerusalem and go to Tarshish, then I'm leaving God behind. Okay? So that would have been kind of the mindset behind Elohim there. Adonai is another term, and it's translated in the biblical narrative as Lord, but it's almost always in lower cases, and it's a general term for someone who's in authority. The term Yahweh, when you see it, it is often translated Lord, and you will notice in the Bibles that it is almost always in all caps. That's used always in reference to God. To the God of the Bible, the God that created, like Jonah said, he created the sea and the land and all of that. And so there are three different references to God. And what's happening in this story, again, the story, see, we're not even to the big fish yet. What's happening in the story is you have a crew of sailors on a ship to Tarshish who are worshiping and praying to their own gods, but in the process, they're learning about Jonah's God. They're learning about the Yahweh God, the God who was the creator of the sea and the land and the one who is causing the storm because Jonah is running from him. Well, the storm continues, and their best efforts don't seem to be overcoming the storm, and they're having a rougher and rougher time. And so finally they decide to throw Jonah overboard. And in the storyline, they actually ask God to not hold against them what they are about to do. And when they ask God, it's fascinating in the Hebrew language, when they ask God to not hold against them what they do, three times they refer to him as Yahweh. Not Elohim, not Adonai, they refer to him as Yahweh. Maybe, just maybe, their belief is starting to shift from an Elohim God to a Yahweh God. It says, then the sailors picked Jonah up and threw him into the raging sea. And the storm stopped at once. This is difficult for us, but could you imagine what that moment is like? This is probably the worst storm these sailors had experienced storms before. Probably was not uncommon for them to experience storms as they sailed about. But this was probably the most intense and violent storm they had ever had. And they had this interaction with this guy named Jonah who's telling them he's running from God and all that. And if you throw me overboard, everything will be calm and all that. And they get so desperate. They get so desperate. This is like their last-ditch effort. All right, if that's what it's going to take, then we'll throw you overboard. They probably don't believe it's going to make any difference, right? But they pick him up, they toss him over. And as I like to think of it this way in my head, as soon as Jonah hit the water, it all stopped. Now, in that moment, I would think that you'd throw Jonah out the little life preserver thing and bring him back on the boat to see if the storm started up again. I go back and forth. I'd throw him in like a half a dozen times. One, two, three, see, every time. You know, just to see what happens. But, and again, if we grew up hearing this story, if we're familiar with this story, we become so familiar with this story that we miss the story. They throw him over and the storm stops. And then things just get weird. Because it says that the sailors were awestruck by the Lord's great power, and they offered him a sacrifice and vowed to serve him. The most intense storm that's calmed in a moment when Jonah hits the water and thing that Jonah had told them about God and about his relationship with God and about how God wanted him to go to Nineveh, but he all that stuff that he had told them in the midst of this storm, and they're awestruck by God's great power, and so they offer him a sacrifice and they vow to serve him. You see, the story is so much more, about so much more than just Jonah. The story is about the sailors. The sailors who worship an Elohim God, who come to vow to serve Yahweh God, Jonah's God, because of God's great power. This story is about so much more than just Jonah. And so then, you know, and then you've got Jonah. I would love to know in this moment when these guys are offering a sacrifice and vow, what's Jonah doing? Is he just kind of floating in there, waiting? Because everything's calm now, the storm's over. You know, I would love to know, how long does it take between when they threw him in the boat and the big fish comes and swallows him up? Because we all know, I mean, most of it who grew up, we know that's what happens. We know that Jonah gets swallowed up by a big fish and spends it three days in the night in the belly of this fish. We all know that. But how long did it take? I mean, did Jonah just kind of float out there randomly for a while, given some time to think, look at the guys going, hey, good job, nice. Hey, that's a good sacrifice you made over there. You know, you might put a little bit more over. What's he doing with us going on? But look what's happening in the lives of the sailors. The sailors are having a life-changing experience as a result. So even in the midst of when Jonah isn't doing what God wants him to do, Jonah's actually running in the opposite direction trying to get away from God. And what he learns is that he can't run away from God. That no matter where he goes, God is there. And God is still in charge. God is still the same God who can cause the storm and calm the storm and get our attention and bring to mind what it is that he wants us to do. It's the same God. Whether he's in Jerusalem or on the ship to Tarshish or whether he would have gone to Nineveh. I had somebody tell me just this week, actually, he said, you know, sometimes we have to go to Tarshish. So sometimes we have to go to Tarshish to realize that Tarshish isn't where we want to be. And he said, I don't believe that if Jonah had gone to Nineveh the first time that the story would have turned out the same. I don't know. Maybe it would have, maybe it wouldn't have. But because Jonah didn't, look what happens to the lives of the sailors. And look what's happening in Jonah's life. And so here's where it comes. It says, now the Lord had arranged for a great fish. You can translate whale in there if you want. To swallow Jonah. And Jonah was inside the fish for 3 days and three nights. Now, on the surface, it would seem like being swallowed by a great fish in the context of Jonah's story would be an act of punishment. And having to spend 3 days and three nights in the belly of a great fish would be an act of punishment. I mean, after all, the belly of a great fish probably isn't the most pleasant place to be. It's probably dark. It's probably damp. It probably smells like the inside of a fish. And I don't know, but fish don't always smell that great. Right? But in the context of Jonah's story, the belly of the great fish is a place of redemption. It's a place of grace. Because if God had not arranged for Jonah to be swallowed up for a great fish, what would have happened to Jonah? I don't imagine that he had the physical stamina to swim from where he got thrown in to the next land site. I don't think that the sailors were probably going to bring him back on board after all the tumult and chaos that he caused and all that. What would have happened to Jonah? Jonah would have drowned. Jonah would have died in the sea as a result of this. Had God not arranged for the great fish to swallow him up. So the great fish swallowing up, it's easy to say it's an act of punishment for Jonah going the opposite direction, but it's an act of redemption. It's an act of grace. It's an act of love. That God still cares about Jonah. God still cares about the people of Nineveh. God still wants Jonah and wants relationship with Jonah. And guess what? God cared enough about the sailors to make a difference in their lives. And the biblical narrative tells us that while Jonah's in there, this is funny to me actually, while he's in there, Jonah prayed to God. Well, yeah, you're in the middle of a fish. What else you got to do? You just went through the most violent storm of your life and you probably should have drowned, probably should have died. I wonder if Jonah, while he's in there, if Jonah thanked God for the fish. God, thanks for bringing this fish along to swallow me up so I didn't drown in the sea. It says that Jonah prayed to God and Jonah began to come to grips with the reality that the reason he was in the great fish was because he chose not to go. Chose to run from God rather than to run with God. It says he came to grips with it. And when Jonah came to grips with the reality of his circumstances and the reality of the cause for his circumstances, it tells us that the great fish, after 3 days and three nights, spit Jonah out onto the shore. And the Hebrew word there is literally translated vomit. So you can carry that with you for the rest of the day. So he spits him out onto the shore. And God says, hey, Jonah, I want you to go to Nineveh. And I want you to communicate my judgment against the wicked city of Nineveh. It's a great city, but it's a wicked city. And I want those people to know about my judgment before my judgment happens. I want those people to know about my judgment before that judgment happens. Which means that God cares enough about them and desires relationship with them to put in place a mechanism for them to be warned. And he asked Jonah to do that. And Jonah says, not again, God. We got to do this again. I don't know if that's what he said. I made that up. Actually, it says this time, Jonah obeyed the Lord's command and went to Nineveh. This time. The reason there was a this time is because Jonah didn't do it the first time. And everything that happened in between happened because Jonah didn't do it the first time. I don't know if my friend is right. I don't know if the Ninevites would have been saved. I don't know how the story would have turned out different. But here's the thing. I don't know how my story would have turned out different had I made different decisions along the way. And I guarantee you, there are circumstances in my life in which I should have made different decisions. But it's part of my journey, and this is part of Jonah's journey, and it's part of the sailor's journey, and it's part of the whale's journey, and it's part of the Ninevites' journey. This is this time Jonah obeyed. And Jonah goes to them, and he tells them, he says, 40 days from now, 40 days from now, Nineveh will be destroyed. Now, I have a feeling that the reason Jonah chose the 40 days is because that's the message God gave him to communicate. And there are several different ways that the number 40 is used in the Bible. Oftentimes, 40 is used to represent a generation. And so when this generation had passed, when 40 years had passed, this generation and all that, that does not appear to be the case, because typically when it's generational, it's 40 years and not 40 days. And then other times it's used, 40 days is used to communicate a season of judgment, a season of punishment, a season of something. You know, it will rain for 40 days and 40 nights kind of deal and all of that. That doesn't appear to be the case here. Another way that the term 40 is often used is for a period of waiting and a period of preparation. That appears to be the use of Jonah's 40 days here, that it is a period of waiting. It is a period of preparation. God's judgment has been clearly communicated. In 40 days, Nineveh will be destroyed. And so it's a period of Nineveh waiting for the judgment to happen, a period of preparation for the judgment to happen. But it's also a period of God waiting. God is waiting 40 days to destroy Nineveh. God is preparing for 40 days to destroy Nineveh. And why is he waiting? He is waiting in hopes that Nineveh will change. He's waiting in hopes that his grace will be enough for them to change. I guess it's too bad that God only waits in the days of Jonah. And God only prepares only the people of Nineveh for the judgment to come. It's too bad that God doesn't wait for people like me and people like you. It's too bad that God doesn't communicate in advance what the result of our decisions and the consequences for our actions could be. It's too bad that God doesn't do that for people like me and people like you, that only people like Jonah and only people of Nineveh get that kind of grace and that kind of compassion and that kind of love and that kind of waiting and that kind of preparation from the Yahweh God. Too bad, right? And here's what happens. It says the people of Nineveh believed God's message. And not only did the people of Nineveh believe God's message, but the people of Nineveh changed, including the king of Assyria who lived in Nineveh. The king of Assyria heard the message and he decreed, made a law that based on Jonah's message, all of the nation of Assyria would worship the Yahweh God. all of the nation of Assyria would change and align with the things of the Yahweh God. This is just such a simple response to a complex situation. Nineveh is a great city, but a wicked city. And Jonah delivers the message in 40 days, and the people say, well, we don't want that, so let's change. They believed God's message, and they changed accordingly. Now, as is commonplace for people, none of us, but as is commonplace for a lot of people, the change didn't last that long. And they went right back to their ways. Maybe one of the reasons they went back to their ways is because they were scared. And you know, sometimes when you make a decision because you're scared of a consequence, and then things lighten up and the consequence doesn't happen, then you don't feel the need to change anymore, right? Again, that's none of us here. But we all know people like that. Or we change because somebody told us we had to. So the king decreed a law that we had to live this way. And again, we all know people who change for a short period of time because somebody told them to, but then after a while they kind of resent the fact that somebody told them what they had to do, and they just go back and do what they want. You know, again, we all know people like that, right? And so maybe the people of Nineveh, the change didn't last long, because it was decreed, or because the fear passed, or for whatever reason, but the change didn't last long. Now, the interesting thing is, when Jonah delivered that message and he saw the people of Nineveh change, he didn't know that the change was going to be short-lived. He didn't realize it was going to be short-lived. And this is what it says in Jonah about what he thought about the change. He says, this change of plans, which means God spared them from destruction because they changed. That's the change he's talking about. This change of plans greatly upset Jonah, and he became very angry. What? You just had an entire nation spared from destruction and changed and turned to your God, and you're very angry and upset about this? God just used you to transform a nation, gave you the responsibility to communicate to a nation in a way that changed the trajectory of their lives and changed their relationship with God, and you're greatly upset and you're very angry about this? Dude, what is your problem? Even 3 days in the belly of the fish couldn't reconcile what Jonah knew about God and how he felt about the people of Nineveh. That's how much Jonah hated the people of Nineveh. And so Jonah then begins to complain to God about this. He said, I knew that you are a merciful and compassionate God, slow to get angry and filled with unfailing love. You are eager to turn back from destroying people. I knew that about you, and that's why I didn't want to tell the Ninevites, because that's who you are, and I hate them. Apparently, these are bad things. Apparently being a merciful and compassionate God, slow to get angry and filled with unfailing love and eager to turn back from destroying people, is a bad thing. Jonah is actually quoting the most famous part of God's affirming his identity to the nation of Israel. This phrasing is used by God in his revelation to Moses on Mount Sinai. So these words are God's words that Jonah is throwing back at God. But the interesting thing is, Jonah leaves out a part. Jonah leaves out a part about God abounding in truth. He says all this about God, but he doesn't talk about the abounding in truth part, because what he's saying in leaving that out is, I don't trust you to do the right thing. I don't trust you to do things the way I think they should be done. I think the Ninevites should be destroyed. I think the Ninevites should experience this. I think this. And because you were all those things and you were abounding in truth and you will do the right thing, I don't trust you. That's what Jonah is saying to God. And then Jonah goes on to complain a little bit more. He says, just kill me now, Lord. Look at this. I'd rather be dead than alive if what I predicted would not happen. You would rather be dead than have the people of Assyria not destroyed in 40 days like you told them? You would rather be dead than have God extend His grace, compassion, mercy, and love to a people you don't like? Or is it that you are so arrogant and proud that you would rather be dead than be wrong? I don't know which is more condemning to Jonah. Dude, you would rather be dead than to be wrong? Well, on day 41, just kill me now. Don't wait till day 41. Just kill me now, because I'd rather be dead. Well, in his little hissy fit, God asks Jonah about things, and instead of answering God, Jonah goes to the other side of the city and pouts. And so God arranges, just like He arranged for a great fish, God arranges for a plant to grow and to provide shade for Jonah. And Jonah's very happy about this. Jonah loves the shade. The next morning when Jonah wakes up, a worm eats the plant and there is no shade. And Jonah is angry with God, and angry enough that he wants to die because he's miserable. And in the midst of his temper tantrum, in the midst of his hissy fit, God asks him a question. He says to him, he says, you feel sorry about the plant, though you did nothing to put it there. It came quickly and it died quickly. But Nineveh has more than 120,000 people living in spiritual darkness, not to mention all the animals. Go ahead, next slide. And then he says, shouldn't I feel sorry for such a great city? Yeah, Jonah, you get mad about the plant that provides shade to you being taken away. You didn't have anything to put it there. You didn't have anything to do with it. But yet here are these people about which you can do something. And shouldn't I, God, care enough about those people? This right here, this is where the story ends. The story ends with Jonah sitting on the opposite side of the city, having been challenged with God's question. And we don't know. We don't know how the story is resolved. We don't know what Jonah chose, how Jonah responded. And I think that's kind of God's point. You see, the story of Jonah, yeah, it's about Jonah, but it's about so much more than Jonah. It's about the sailors. It's about self-sufficiency. It's about greed. It's about running the opposite direction from God. It's about all of that. But it's about the sailors. It's about the big fish, the plant, the worm, all of which God arranged to point people, maybe even people like me and people like you, to His great love. The reason that Jonah didn't want to go to Nineveh can be summed up as a lack of love. The reason God wanted Jonah to go to Nineveh was because of His great love. You see, Jonah's story is about Jonah, but it's about all the other things. It's not about the whale. The whale's a piece. But it's about so much more than that. Jonah's story is about you and about me. Maybe we can relate to Jonah's story because we feel like we're in a period of waiting and preparation. And maybe we don't realize that that period of waiting and preparation is actually an act of God's love, grace, and mercy and compassion to us, to prepare us. Or maybe you relate to Jonah's story because God has asked you to do something and you just flat don't want to do it. You see, when God asks, you choose. So what do? Let me pray for you. Dear God, thank you for today. Thank you for this time together and the people that you have assembled here. Thank you for the spider that joined us to distract us. Or the spider that joined us to focus us on something that drew our attention to you in some way. Thank you for this incredible story of Jonah. Jonah and the big fish. The big fish that's easy to see as a form of punishment, but in fact is a huge, huge provision of grace and redemption. A place in which Jonah pondered the reality of life and his circumstances and relationship with you and came to an understanding that the best place he could find himself in the belly of a great fish is in the place where you want him to be. And may each and every one of us take a step in discovering that the best place for us is to be where you want us to be, doing what you have given us to do, pursuing relationship with you, and extending your love for others to those who desperately need it. God, when you ask, let us choose wisely and let us choose rightly. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, so we'll roll the preview video for next week. When the preview video is over, you're dismissed. Thanks for being here. Have a great rest of the day and a great week.